Welcome to This Week in Hospitality Marketing, the podcast show number 237, with your host, Lauren Gray.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hospitality Marketing, the podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Gray. And this is episode 237. Each week, we spend around 20 to 30 minutes sharing the most interesting tools, news, and techniques being used in marketing for the hospitality industry. We also do a quick recap of our weekly live video show, This Week in Hospitality Marketing, which also airs every Friday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time. So with that, let's get started.
And now, today's new resource tool.
Okay, so our tool this week for review is actually an interesting one that I've just begun to use in combination with all my other aspects of retargeting. And this is called Quokka, Quokka.io. Now, for the Edward St. John's and Stuart Butlers of the world and so forth, they cringe at the idea of being given or giving these types of tools to the uninitiated or the novice, because it can be used for as much harm as it can be good. The tool itself, Quokka, is a retargeting platform that takes your unopened emails based on what platform you're using them for. And it can also use Zapier, which is a platform we've talked about before that can integrate other platforms together. It can also take CSV files and do the same thing. And you load them up, and what it does is you connect your social media accounts, in this case, Facebook, Twitter, and Google, okay? And what it will do is take your list of unopened emails and begin to retarget them on those platforms. It'll create the ads with you. It'll create the content for you based on the emails that you're sending them as content. And it will redistribute and try to, in your ad campaigns, now this is a paid for, it's not like it's just going to organically post for them, okay? You have to pay for them. It literally creates a custom audience, okay? And that becomes a retargeting one. Now, the features of this tool that I like are that once an action has been created on it, and you can determine what that action is, it'll take the recipient off the list to not continue to be retargeted. Why is that important? Well, as we all know, it is so frustrating that when we visit any website, to all of a sudden see it peppered all over every other place we go on the internet. And it doesn't just stop once or twice or 1 or 2 days or 3 days. They will pound you to death for days on end because they have no sense of the control of frequency. Frequency, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, is just as important as the accuracy of retargeting. And that accuracy comes from what data you are extracting these emails that haven't been opened and what are you using them for. And we'll get to all those points in a little bit. But Quokka as a tool, very fun in the sense that, and even Marriott has used it, which is ironic, is one of their clients. But what it does is it talks about actually and analytically tracking what it converts for you. So in the world of justifications of cost and efforts, you have this email list. And let's say you're very rudimentary in your email campaigns. We talked a little bit about email last week. Where you've sent out this email as a newsletter. Okay, great. You get a certain number of unsubscribes, which is hopefully exceptionally low. You also get a lot of opening rates, and you have certain percentages associated with that. Industry averages are about 20% opening rate. From there, you usually get a decent click-through. And so depending upon the numerics of how many emails you sent, there's a conversion factor associated with all of that. Now, that's all well and good, but there's a tremendous amount that just don't get opened. As we mentioned, there's a 20% opening rate. Now, we have shared tools that do workflows like Snove.io, I should say, that will create workflows that will re-trigger an email send. So picture this. You send an email, and X percentage opens it up, say 20%. Well, then those that didn't open it up and that weren't hard bounces or unsubscribes or spam reports or anything like this, but just, and they were still good emails, we usually do a retrigger, which will send it out with a different subject line. And then you're left with now still a list of those that still did not open it. What do you do with that list? Now, in times past, there's other ways to retarget and retrigger and so forth, and there's certainly other tools that allow you to retarget as well. With Quokka.io, you can take that unopened email list, and if the platform doesn't interact with the platform that you use for your email sends, and in most cases it probably won't unless you're using prosumer level MailChimp or some other pro services, but if you're using the more traditional hospitality ecosystem platforms like TravelClick or others like that, Revenate or what have you, won't do this. So you have to extract it as a CSV file of unopens, send that over to the platform, and have it and allow it to retarget to the social platforms you've connected it to. There is where the tool has its best benefit, because it will actually track the conversion values that it has given based on the metrics you've assigned to it, just like any campaigns, what's the conversion value and what have you. But most importantly, from it, it will take a person off the list if you say, hey, if anybody opens this up, if anybody opens in this ad, I want them to take off the list whether they buy something or not. Or maybe if they do go into the ad, I want them to buy something to be taken off the list. That makes a nice frequency control so that you're not totally irritating people with always showing up in their newsletters, in their newsfeed, and always showing up on their social platforms, persistently annoying, because that just, it irritates people. It irritates me, and I'm sure it irritates you, that when you see this persistence of, okay, I got it, but I don't want to buy your product, and now you're just irritating me. And now I'll never buy your product because you've irritated me. So Quokka.io is our tool review of the week.
Now, for this week's hospitality technique.
Okay, our technique of the week is an expansion, as always, off of what we discussed as a tool. And that's more of a broad discussion of retargeting. Retargeting in all its forms without irritating our potential guest. As I mentioned before, frequency is a very strong indicator of irritation. Nothing's worse than touching a website again and having it repetitively show up anywhere else I go on the internet. It gets me to where I'm just, even if I was interested in your product, I'm less likely to buy it because you're just annoying. Most rule of thumbs are, if I haven't it opened and up in the third to fifth time I've seen your ad in other iterations, and I'll talk about what other iterations means in just a moment, likelihood is I'm not in a position to make a transaction decision yet. So stop. Now, other iterations, and this goes to our earlier workflow conversations that we've had on other podcasts as well. Talking to a guest as if it's always the first time that they're seeing you is a little bit like Alzheimer's. You can't keep repeating yourself saying the same thing just because you hope they forgot the last time they talked to you. We're a progressive conversation. Your first ad should be your introduction ad. Your second ad should be a continuation of what the first ad conveyed. Your third ad should be a continuation of what your second ad added to the first conversation. Your fourth ad should be something that's relevant, that more specific, maybe a better offer even at that point if they're not really converting at this point. So there are iterations of conversations, workflows of engagement in retargeting that are very smart. A lot of people, even if they do try to do retargeting, do it very simplistically, very kindergartenish, in the sense that they're like, okay, I'm going to start a retargeting campaign. And all they do is take the same original offer ads and maybe change up titles or headers or something, but it's the same ad in just different format layouts. And then they shove it in front of you on different platforms, whether it's your newsfeed, your sidebar, your push, your notifications, your Twitter, whatever, but it's the same message. It shouldn't be the same message. It should be a progression of conversations in your retargeting based on the time decay of your engagement with them. You don't know whether they've, well, that's not accurate. You do know if they do engage with your retargeting by the fact that you have statistics associated with it. But obviously, if you create a trigger of completion where they have to go through the confirmation process, in this case, booking a room or a reservation in your restaurant or whatever the fulfillment is, then they're taken off the list. Some platforms don't even do that. And that's even more annoying. Somebody just already bought a hotel room from you. They've already booked with you. And now they continue to see your ads all over the place as if you had never done business with them. Very frustrating and very amateurish. The real value of retargeting is in thinking that the first exposure was not the conversion exposure. The first exposure was an awareness. It might be in the discovery phase of the guest. It might be in the conclusion point, but they still haven't made a decision yet. Any which way, they did not convert. From that means the next engagement with them, the next retargeting, should be an advancement of what was already presented to them. If it was an incentive value, then there should be incentive offers associated with it in the next conversation, whether it's a price point or added amenities or better explanations of the variances of those amenities. And then the next conversation after that might be even a stronger incentive to imply that you understand that this is a decision they've yet to make. Now, you don't always have to keep discounting yourself in that conversation. You don't have to keep bringing down lower and lower and lower or better bring your offers, because if your price is your price and your price is a good price, it's just a fact of maybe reaffirming that the price is an excellent choice, that the dates are an excellent choice, that the proximity or the amenities agencies are an excellent choice, or there's an aspect of their travel that you can include with what they're doing that they may not have been aware of. Those are additional amenity values that you can discuss with your guest on this progression of retargeting. But it goes in line with what you're retargeting with, the time span that you're retargeting for, and the frequency in which you're targeting within that time span. Obviously, and this is nuances to this, if they're looking at, and these are trigger dates, if they're looking at something between 3 to 14 days, your frequency pattern will be much tighter and much more intense, I should say. You're going to be more aggressive as to your content. If their discovery or their booking of interest with you is farther than 14 or even 21 days out, and you have your different booking windows to decide this, then your frequency will be wider, longer, and more aspecific during the time cycle of discovery. So when they're interested is just as important as what they're interested in. If it's event-driven, obviously you're time-sensitive. If the event's farther out, less time-sensitive. So this retargeting has its variables that you don't have to be invasive and rude to them by shoving it in front of them persistently. Now, there's also platform variations. Twitter is a 4-second, 7-second blink. If it's not in their newsfeed when they see it, they're less likely to even know that that was even there. Now, when you have Google and you have the retargeting capabilities of it, you have Facebook and the retargeting capabilities of it, you have time sensitivities as to based on your demographics. Is it a mother that's looking to make the travel plans? Now you're looking at maybe early Saturday mornings are a good time to retarget them rather than just looking at shoving it back out anytime during between the first time they make contact with you and the next time. If it's a business travel, business hours of interest might be of more concern to you, basically on Tuesdays, perhaps, when it's not a burden on Monday, not a meetings time on Wednesday, and not a close of week on Friday. If it's a family adventure, but the family is coordinating it based on the discovery level, then you're going to have variations to the data that you're using and the retargeting, so that maybe in one retargeting you've talked about the parents' value, the next one you're talking about the child value. If it's a romantic giveaway, off the beaten path, culinary, whatever the interest categories are, there's a progression of conversation that comes with this. Now, how can you do this, you say? Well, because you begin to segment out the data according to their engagement from times past. Obviously, as previous guests, you understood their previous interests. Doesn't mean that's the only time they're going to be interested in you. And it's certainly, as we all know, by being multi-types travelers, that one minute I'm a business traveler, the next I'm taking a transient leisure travel. I'm a different traveler, but the same person. It's their interest historically, the time of year historically, their time of interest futuristically, their curiosity based on query, their content views on your site. These all create custom pixels. And for those who may not know this, when it comes to Facebook and Google, you can translate what page they landed on with your website to create custom audiences to retarget based on the content that they looked at. Obviously, if they're looking at your wedding page, guess what? They're interested in weddings. If they're looking at the romance package, they're interested in romance getaways, family adventure, on and on and on. So having segmented content on your website is just as critical to the component of retargeting as it is the data source that you've derived it from. Add to that, that in your newsletters, whether you do this in general, like a broadcast of, ta-da, here's 5 or 6 things we want to talk to you about in our monthly newsletter, make sure in your workflow tracking that as people engage in those different things you're offering on your newsletter, that you're siloing that data that says, oh, we had an offer for military personnel on that newsletter, and we had X number of people click on that. Now, besides from the conversion value hopefulness of that, that data turns golden for any time you want to reconstitute a military offer. Same too for last-minute deals, family adventures. So all of these create sources of content filter that allow you to retarget correctly with the proper frequency based on the interest with your guest, determined by platform that you feel the best is to communicate with them based on what they're looking to travel for, and you get the really good retargeting campaigns that once you get that core data source, you can really stretch into a higher and longer value with as you retarget correctly. And that incubation, communication, relationship building, value proposition content that you support on your website only augments that and develops the same content sources for your retargeting. So there you have it, our technique of the week, retargeting in all its forms without irritating your potential guest. And next.
Now, this week's hospitality news that you should know.
news and show review. So this show, unfortunately, I had to abbreviate my time on because I was in New York City doing a wonderful engagement with Travel Tripper, having taken over Pegasus and the absorption of the two together and their futuristic roadmap as to what they're going to be offering as provided services and so forth. And I was privileged to be asked to speak into their roundtable as to insights and anything that could be helpful for in their process of discovery and reconstitution of what they're doing. So that was a lot of fun, but it also meant I was traveling, so I only got to spend a little about the first 30 minutes on the live show. With me, my co-host Stephanie Smith was generous to join me first, followed with Cogwheel Marketing, followed by Tim Peter with Tim Peter Associates. Robert Cole with Rock Cheetah joined shortly thereafter, followed by Lily Mockerman with TCRM and Heads Up. And so, too, also Dan Waxman with Sasado, based out of Honolulu, but he was with me in New York. He, however, did have a different travel plan, so he was able to spend a little bit more time on the show. And then behind him was Stuart Butler with Fuel. Not Fuel Travel anymore, but Fuel. It's kind of like Prince, you know, just one name, or what is it, Elvis, or, you know, all those goes, one name wonders and so forth. Sting. Anyway, so I only got to participate in one topic conversation, and that was, we're watching Oyo's spiral. It seems like the owner or CEO is doubling down on their perspective. And to be fair to the article that we're referring to, most of what he was referring to as being good business decisions seemed like decent business decisions. If they lent you money, yes, you have 3 years to pay it back. And they're going to want you to pay it back in 3 years, not, you know, just walk away from it. If you want to control your own rate, then they can't make the guarantee of a certain minimum revenues that you're going to make because they're not controlling that stream any longer. So there was some contra logic to the fact that, you know, those examples were pretty soft when it came to other perspectives people have on Oyo's rate and revenue management strategies, their penetration of market, their brand recognition, brand awareness, brand sustainability. There's lots of other things I think that could have been pointed at that would have made stronger the point that Oyo has made some difficult decisions or poor decisions in both what they're doing and their reorganization. But I think the points that were made out of the article weren't as strong as they could have been based on what they were discussing. But that is not the topic I'd like to bring about for today. That was the whole show recap will be at hospitalitydigitalmarketing.com/live. There, look for show number 237. There I'll have all of the timestamps as to all the topics and articles that were discussed that I did not get to participate in. And you'll be able to go back and look at the timestamps and listen to that particular part of the show if you would not want to listen to its entirety, to catch what they said about those particular topics. Plus also the entire well-curated list from Mr. Robert Cole will be also on the show notes that you can find there at hospitalitydigitalmarketing.com/live. You can also sign up for his newsletter for free, which is a really great curated list. I think he's going to start probably charging for it soon because it was very well, it had always been well received for these past years at HSMEI for all of their boards. It was kind of like a secret list that people followed religiously. And I think it'd be unfair for him to just keep throwing it out for free. We get to have it with the show, which is nice. But I think he's going to start asking for subscription. But you can right now sign up for it at bit.ly/rockcheetah, all lowercase, no space. And you'll be able to sign up for the newsletter as it exists right now. So the two news articles that I'd like to talk about, and they probably were talked about to some degree in the show, was Google's customized travel search features receive massive traffic in the U.S. That's one of them. And the article itself is very strong about what numbers are actually coming through with Google when it comes to how they're dominating all of the traffic for their travel now. It's not just that they are in the space, but from a U.S. traffic point of view, to give you some comparison, the usage of Google flights and hotels and their vertical growth within this space, not their lateral growth of, you know, cube hyperlinks and helpful tools and techniques and trips and things and find out more kind of stuff, but actual flights and hotel reservations and bookings of travels and so forth, they, for the year of 2019, generated 674 million direct visits to their Google flights and hotels, compared to the next closest one, which is Expedia, at 360. After that would be Bookings.com at 333, and then TripAdvisor 207. So I wouldn't say over double because it's not quite there, but it is very close to being almost double its nearest competitor, and certainly more than both of its second and third place Booking and Expedia combined. So, or almost as much, I should say. So with that, you have to know that Google is truly, as we said in many episodes before, the 800-pound gorilla. They're the ones that are at the beginning of the fountain, the beginning of the stream, that can control the traffic that even comes to us as hoteliers, as brands, as OTAs, as everyone. And of course, this is dominant in the U.S. They're not near as dominant in the international communities by far, but they are substantively growing when it comes to that. It's not as if they're on the downside to it. It's just a growing aspect to the globalization. Obviously, China is not in that impact because China does not have Google, did not allow it in. But it is a growing segment in EU, in Canada, in APAC, outside of China, South America, that is only growing larger. And because of that, all things flow through Google, and we know this. And it is very imperative from our strategies as hoteliers, as restaurateurs, that we play within their sandbox, do what it is they want us to do. But remember, our retainer relationship with our guest is something that is not in Google's hands. It's in ours. How well we succeed in our guest satisfaction, how well we communicate with our guests directly via our emails, our aspects of communication with our guests, is probably the most paramount way that we can somehow keep our individuality rather than our commoditization of our product. So very important that we keep sight of the fact that Google is, in a dominant way, the thing to be concerned with. So our other article, which is going kind of in a vein, contrary to a little bit of our concerns as in our current economies with the coronavirus really making a negative impact on travel interest and destinations, regardless of the fact of how well your rate or how great your product, just a concern of travel at this point. This is a positive side to this, and that is, what's next in travel? Nature treks, trips to the past, and conscientious dining. Not in the way that you would normally think of topics when it comes to, you know, we talk about culinary adventures and so forth. We talk about cultural adventures. We talk about those types of focuses on travel. But these are a little bit more centric, a little bit smaller in scope, and a little bit more less primary tourist destination. This isn't going to Venice to see Italy. This is going to a very small village elsewhere in Italy and experience more, I wouldn't say more authentic, but a different authentic experience of being in Italy or in Morocco or what have you. And some of these, like for instance, the first categorization was nature calls. Now, we all know that there's the adventurer, the soft adventurer, sometimes we have to classify them. But what they're finding now is that people are not just looking at the tourist, oh, I got to show up at the Colorado River and take a river raft ride. No, they're talking about taking snowshoes under the stars in Park City, Utah. Sunrise hike at Ella Rock in Sri Lanka. These not so well-known things, but truly adventurous things, are now a part of the discovery of the depth of what the internet can now provide us, that people are looking for other things other than what is highlighted. Oh, I got to go to the Grand Canyon, look down the canyon, take a couple pictures. Oh, I got to go to Colorado River, ride on the rapids. I got to go to New York City and go up to the Empire State Building. That is the known. Now these are the discovered. And it's really a great article about some of the things that people are finding in that aspect. One is going back in time is now in vogue, which is the history experience. Now, we talked about the closest categorization we usually would mention is the cultural one, looking at a culture of a country that you're going to. But this is actually even in your own and also in other countries, doing things that aren't the traditional touristy, having been done before things. Looking at, let's see, it was a hidden room and bone crypts in Rome, Italy, which is the catacombs, which not a lot of people went to, even though it has been there for quite a while, obviously. But it's not one of the more major features of going to Rome. Free walking tour, welcome to Havana. The Dutch countryside outside of Amsterdam. These are just some of the variations to, okay, Amsterdam's an amazing city to go see, and there's certainly a bajillion things that make it worth going to Amsterdam to see. These are more things to see outside of being in Amsterdam that give you even more reason to travel to the area for itself. Also, too, is people, because whether it be the stress of the world or what have you, are beginning to realize that vacations shouldn't be so overly planned and full and chock full of things, but sometimes just disconnecting is good enough for vacation. There's a lot of meditation and sound journey stuff. Joshua Tree, California, waterfall meditation in Kapai, Honolulu, Hawaii. Mile High Mystic Meditation in Denver. These are things, I mean, Denver is an amazing city to go visit. So too are our cities nearby or townships nearby, like Aspen and Vail going through the mountains and so forth, and the gorge train and all the touristy things that are in that area. These are things beyond that. and for a different categorization of travel. Why do we bring these up? Because these are niches that, from a hotelier's point of view, you have to broaden your perspective of what people travel to your destination market for. There could be other things that you just take for granted or weren't even aware of in your market that aren't tourist-centric. The CVB hasn't listed in its top 10 things, but are truly worth finding and discovering in your own market. They might be a brewery that you weren't aware of, or the fact that there's multiple breweries that you weren't aware of. There might be certain parks or places that people like because of meditation or what have you that make it a nexus for people to come and visit you for. There could be ghost tours. There could be lots of fun things that people will find of interest in these, I wouldn't say niche markets or even long tail markets, but they're certainly not the broad spectrum markets. They are the less mass market finites. They're also talking about tiny home travels and little shepherd huts and places to go to that aren't necessarily the big box hotels. And I bring this up because oftentimes people revert to the most convenient, standardized, I mean, brand means homogeny. Meaning, I know what to expect going there because I'm just going to see the same thing in one place I'm going to see in the other ways. That's why McDonald's was as famous as it was, as a Big Mac was a Big Mac. You didn't have to wonder whether the mom and pop hamburger joint you're pulling into in the town you've never been in was actually going to be edible or good. Now we're discovering that we can learn all that on the internet long before we show up, so we don't need to worry about the brand value as much. And this is a reflection of that. There's lots of little places to go to. Also, eating clean and conscientiously, where it's just not finding the really cool restaurants, but finding the restaurants that are truly unique in where they are for what they are, farm to tables, and other restaurants that only the locals know. And I know this is a very high value for a lot of people traveling. Nobody wants to just go to the standard restaurants. I mean, we make it a point when my wife and I travel that if we go into a chain restaurant, it's only because that's our only option. Either because of convenience, because we're really driving down the road and just need to grab a bike, pull through and continue on, or it's the only thing that's in the airport and we got to get it because we got to get on a plane and that's about it. Outside of that, we refuse to go over and do chain because that's part of the excitement of being in a destination is finding out what is unique to that destination for dining. So these are some of the aspects that I thought were really great news articles associated with what's next in travel, nature treks, trips to the past, conscientious dining. All these ones are now new ways of redefining the traveler's motivation to your market potentially. So there you have it. Remember, you can find us on Google Play, Apple iTunes, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, well, actually about 39 platforms and counting. I hope that by finding them on the platform of your choice that you have subscribed to us already. Please leave a comment and a rating for us. The more comments and ratings we get, the more people discover our podcast and get to enjoy it. If you have any comments, insights, criticisms, or anything, you can reach me directly at lauren@hospitalitydigitalmarketing.com. I answer all emails associated with both my podcast and the live show. And as a matter of fact, you can even just ask Alexa or Google or Siri to play our latest episode of our podcast, and it will do so automatically. So we're finding a lot of people that are using literally their Alexa to say, hey, Alexa, play Hospitality Marketing Podcast, and it'll play the latest episode. If you're finding us for the first time, please subscribe to us to any platform that you find that is the one of your favorites. Again, leaving a comment as well would be wonderful for me and for all of us as we put the content together. And again, if you have any suggestions, let me know. You can find this episode and all previous 236 episodes of our podcast, going back way more years than we want to, 6 years plus. And that is at hospitalitydigitalmarketing.com/podcasts. And there you'll see the link to this and all previous episodes. If you'd like to sign up for and participate in our live show, which is every Friday at 11:30 Eastern U.S. time, you can go to hospitalitydigitalmarketing.com/live. There you will see both the registration for the next episode show and links to all of our previous archives with show links and information and timelines for all of the things that were discussed. That show lasts usually about an hour and a half, 2 hours. And we get now a little over 15,000 people that will listen and subscribe to it over 28 countries. So we have a wonderful group of co-hosts and people that come in from all over the world and share their insights, comments, and information with us. So again, thank you for the privilege of your time, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
You have been listening to This Week in Hospitality Marketing, the podcast show 237 brought to you by Hospitality Digital Marketing and support of the HSMAI, the Hospitality Sales and Marketing Association International, all rights reserved, copyright 2020.